First and 10 from the Steeler 45. Lamar in the shotgun, three receivers to the right. Here's the snap. Jackson will hand it off to Henry. Up the middle, big hole. 30, 25, down to the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Ravens. Derrick Henry's second touchdown run of the night. Bursting up the middle for 44. And the Ravens lead 27-7.
It looked like a movie clip. Like, you know, when like, I'm going to give Cars. You watch the movie Cars? A little bit too old to watch Cars, but anyway, for kids, I was a kid when I watched Kids. I was a kid when I watched Cars, that's all I'm saying. But you know when Lightning McQueen just flashing past, and then it's like, that's how Derek looked when he was running past, and all those guys just, it looked like a movie, bro, I'm not gonna lie to you, but I'd rather be watching it than being on the opposite side of the ball, I know that.
That's a fun movie.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
I like when Lamar gives us a little window in, because he doesn't do it that often, but every now and again, he gets a little giddy up there at the microphone, and it's wonderful to see. And even if he watched Cars last week, that's a quality movie to have as one of your favorites.
Yeah, I'm down with Cars, man. Paul Newman as the grizzled old car, the racer. That's a super fun movie.
It was wild to see, though, like Derrick Henry bust up the middle and then just outrun everyone.
Yeah, the fact that he's still got that. What do you think of the comp I made in transition that Derrick Henry is the Nolan Ryan of running backs? Keeps getting older, but stays just as fast somehow and keeps going.
It's pretty good. Like, I'm so glad that we are at a place because... The way that the market reacted to running backs and how we got to this place where people felt like it was okay to just be like, oh, running backs don't matter. No, there's a large group of running backs that are probably interchangeable. There are still a bunch of running backs that are really special. And if you get it right, whether it's one person carrying the mail or you have a nice combination, like in Detroit, they have a really nice combination of backs. In Philadelphia, it's one dude. In Baltimore, it's one dude. In Green Bay, it's one dude. But even last night, like you saw the Tampa, they have an opportunity to have a pretty special guy in their backfield. Like it's just, I'm so happy that we are in a place where running backs are not dismissed.
I agree with you because I've always loved running backs. I've loved the aesthetics of it and the uniqueness of each one, the styles of them through the years. It's super fun to think about and let your mind kind of imagine and just like remember which ones were your favorite stylistically and what backs remind you of others. And they all have their own kind of unique style, like painters, sort of. There's a thing that connects you to great running backs you've watched your whole life.
And there's something cool, too, about a running game, like, involved.
Dude, that's the thing that has been undeniable to me, kind of relearned all year long, and especially as we watch what we thought was going to be a great Bears season turn into an absolutely awful Bears season. They clearly, as we have discussed, thought that they could just put the rookie quarterback out there who's real good and let him pass to the three wideouts and let that be the identity of the offense. And then teams would respect that enough that you'd also be able to run it. And that's not how it works in this league, even at the very highest level, even with quarterbacks who end up putting up incredible numbers. Like, people don't fear Lamar, and that's why they're able to run. That running game will beat the bejesus out of you. And Lamar will create based off that run game. And, of course, eventually they work hand in hand because you fear them both.
Well, I think that he's gotten to the point now that he is feared.
No, he is. But it's way, way better with the run game. And the run game, historically there in Baltimore, has given him a chance to grow into this as well. They set up the run first and gave him a chance to grow.
And he's a significant part of it.
Yes.
And like when you add someone like Derrick Henry to the mix, it's damn near unstoppable. And I'm looking forward to see what it looks like against Buffalo. And then maybe they'll get another opportunity to get another crack at KC. I wonder if... if we went back and talked to David Montgomery, like at the time when he was deciding what he was going to do, with the money being equal, I'd love to know like what his, or seemingly equal, what his objection was. Like, and maybe he, from talking to the Bears, was like, they're not serious about a run game.
This is not what they want to do. It's a great point, because he and Ryan Poles have gotten close. It's a great conjecture.
But I do wonder that.
It's thoughtful.
And then you look at what's happened in Detroit, and you go, they said to him, yes, you're our guy. Now watch this. We're going to add this other guy.
And there's plenty to go around for everybody, and this is our identity. And they're getting him back this week, by the way.
Yep.
Dan Campbell's psyched about that. The first drive that Baltimore ran was dominant, and the second drive was 85 yards and 13 plays. Every one of them was a running play.
They don't care.
They physically dominated the Steelers, and Todd Monken gets it. Todd Monken, like, I found myself looking at all three of the offensive coordinators who are Bears potential candidates and thinking about all three of them. Monken, I think what has happened in Baltimore has been incredibly impressive. Obviously, Henry's great and Lamar is great, but it's what they commit to and how they do it, and they just batter the hell out of you. And Monken can do some creative stuff in the past, but they beat the hell out of you. He gets it from a physicality perspective and fits into what Baltimore has done. And what his understanding is, I would like his understanding of offensive football to be the predominant understanding of offensive football in a football team like the Bears.
Well, see, that's another thing that I think is kind of cool. And I'll go back to what Dave Wannstedt was saying. I actually think that we're in a place now where there is a lot of value on the run. You are going to see people like Baker Mayfield that have 4,500 yards passing, but you're also going to see their coordinator, another guy that people are talking about as possibility for the Bears. They're willing to run. Like, if you look at the Wunderkind coaches, those coaches are not just throw it. Like Sean McVay is not just throwing it. He's been a proponent of the run game. LaFleur hasn't done it enough in these last couple weeks.
But which overall, is crazy, because he did it all year and has done it for multiple years here.
Absolutely. Like, these coaches, they're starting. Well, I shouldn't say they're starting. I think that it's more.
It's a rededication. I think it's a rededication.
Yeah, that's
don't
a good
you think
way
so?
To put it.
Yeah, I feel like the whole league has gotten kind of a rededication on it, and I think the Bears are taking note, and I'm taking note, and I hope that fans are taking note. And it was available in all three games. And listen to this about Josh Allen, okay? This is Tony Romo during the game referencing a story he talked about with Josh Allen.
They kept the football for a half quarter. You know, Tony, we're meeting on Friday with Josh Allen, and we said, what are your highlights for the offense this season? And he said right off the bat, first thing, Jimbo getting to 1,000 and tying OJ's rush touchdown record, franchise record of 16. That's where it started for him, because it really does set up everything else for the quarterback.
Everything stems from the running game, and then when you can layer the concepts and make it look like a run, and then the quarterback keeps it, then you make it look like a run, and the quarterback play actions and gets a deep play, everyone gets better, and you put teams in a bind to have a two-way defense that has to play the run, the pass, the quarterback run. It's just too much, and it all starts really with Josh Allen. But the 1-2 punch with Cook and him, you're not beating this team without something special going your way.
It's James Cook, who he calls Jimbo, apparently, but he knows, and then the way that Romo talks about it, just matter of fact, when you have the run game, then you can layer concepts, and defenses have to worry about you because you're multiple. It's like, this is just a basics of NFL understanding that Shane Waldron didn't come here with for whatever reason. Drives me freaking crazy.
I think that he, part the problem with him is that he got caught behind. And I think that whether it's fans or pundits sometimes, I think that people look at some of the gaudy passing numbers and don't give the run game enough credit for setting it up.
100%.
Buffalo ran for 210 yards yesterday. Dude, I think they had 93 yards at the end of the first quarter.
Baltimore ran for 299 yards? Yeah. And look at Josh Allen's numbers on the year. Look at Lamar Jackson's numbers on the year. You look at that, and if you're just looking at the numbers, you think, well, they can just go back and throw it, and they can do that occasionally. But it's the threat of the run game. Did you hear this stat yesterday that Jalen Hurts did a straight drop back without play action for the first time all season yesterday? It's the first time he did it. They always use play action. And it's Saquon who got to 2,000 yards, man. It's like...
Yeah, they averaged 5 yards a carry yesterday. Philly
did? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. And it would have been
a team.
It would have been higher if Saquon went and took that touchdown.
It would have been a lot higher.
So, look, all around the league, and even offensive coordinators who aren't steeped in certain kinds of run game plays and run plays can adjust. This made me like Liam Cohen and made me want to learn about Liam Cohen of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because their run game got rejuvenated during the course of the year with Bucky Irving as the guy. But it wasn't just that Bucky Irving was the guy. It's the plays they were running. Listen to Chris Collinsworth talk about Liam Cohen and the Bucs last night.
And you're going to see that particular play quite a bit. That is the counter play. And it's almost like the Buccaneers completely changed their offense. The first four games of the year, they ran that counter play four times. Since then, that play has averaged 9 yards per play. When you see offensive linemen and tight ends pulling out in front of Bucky Irving, that's what we're talking about.
Why have they made that switch as the season has gone on?
Well, what's really interesting about the whole thing is that Liam Cohen, their offensive coordinator, doesn't come from that background. Really, none of the coaches come from a background of doing all those counters and those kinds of plays. It just happened to fit this offensive line and that back. And so they stuck with it, and now they have about 6 or 7 different versions of it, and they keep getting better at it as the season goes along.
Come on, man. That is football. That's sexy football, isn't it? Because that's a coordinator is like, oh, wait, we're good at this. All right, how do I run it? What can we do? And then goes to work figuring it out. I'm imagining the coaches' rooms when it's like, all right, anybody ever run this stuff anywhere? And they do the research and whatever. Now they have 6 or 7 versions of it and varieties because they figured out it works.
Because then you go, oh, you know what we could do? We could change. We can flip formation on this and do it to the other side if we want. Oh, we can motion this guy in and make him the lead blocker as we pull our center and guard. Like, there's all sorts of stuff that you can do. And I don't want to say football is a simple game because it's not. And it can be very, very complicated. But it's almost as if there was like a 10-year blackout for all of us where it was just like, that's not how you play winning football. And then the coaches like were like, well, since it's give and take, like it happens all the time. So basically what happens is that the passing offenses force the defenses to then create these kind of hybrid defenders.
Yep.
Think Brian Urlacher, who is built up like he should be somebody's defensive end, but he's playing middle linebacker.
Sure. Think Troy Polamalu.
Yeah. You get these hybrids, and in some cases that ends up being you give something away. Like, well, they're an 11 personnel, so we need a Kyler Gordon type out there. And there are not a lot of Kyler Gordons. By the way, at some point, I know that I keep saying this, we really do need to do like a Kyler Gordon Appreciation Day.
Yeah.
I just think that he's a really incredible player, and we don't talk about him enough. Anyway, as I continue to not talk about Kyler Gordon, but you end up getting smaller players that are stout. You end up getting players that are willing to go in there and play the run. So then the countermeasure is, oh, I'm going to go get big offensive linemen again. And we're guys that are big and they can move a little bit.
And then we're just going to beat the hell out of you.
And so now the counter will be there'll be some sort of like London Fletcher type linebacker that'll pop back up. And you'll say, okay, we need someone who's going to really do the dirty work as a linebacker.
I love that.
You take advantage of them in the past. Like it's
beautiful, it's simple, organic. Cyclical. It's organic evolution. Totally agree. And you and I share a love for that, without a doubt. It's really interesting. And And because what has happened, I think you're right, there was that 10-year period, and then Shanahan gets so much love for all the window dressing, all the stuff that dresses it up, and now a lot of people do it. LaFleur does it, and all these other guys do it, but at the heart of it, it's running right straight at you, and you have that fear and respect for coming right directly at you and being able to run through you, and then you dress it up with all this other stuff that you use occasionally, but you most often fake and just go right down the throat of people.
And when we talk to Olin about this type of thing, that's the part where I think folks like kind of got cute with it, is there is a physical and psychological toll on the defense when they are mauled by the run.
Those Steelers were toast by the end of the first quarter.
They were finished.
They were finished. They knew that they did not measure up. And what's happening in Pittsburgh is
bizarre.
It's pretty bizarre.
Speaking of which, let me throw this out because I think eventually it's going to become part of the overall conversation here. Do you want Mike Tomlin? Would you be willing to trade for Mike Tomlin?
It's interesting because I think there's the Steelers comments last night that got released left it a little bit open.
How far would you be willing to go from a draft capital standpoint?
18 years, the man has never had a losing season.
You know that the floor is going to be put in.
Yeah.
The floor is going to be immaculate. You might not get that ceiling done, though.
That's a good way to put it. Mike Sando wrote it this way. Tomlin's streak of 18 consecutive non-losing seasons cannot mask the erosion of real championship aspirations in Pittsburgh.
So it's kind of a similar thing of like the resume is so strong, but does that mean that that's the right person to take you into the future?
This is why Lovey got fired, is that there was belief there that Lovey was not going to get you to a championship, but was going to have really good, solid defenses. You know, and we've talked about this. So do you aspire to have that and then hope you get lucky with the quarterback? When Tomlin had Big Ben, they win Super Bowls.
And well, here you have the quarterback, you think, right?
You think.
I mean, we'll talk more about that at 5.
So you have to say the standard is the standard. It's not about the person. It's about the standard.
The standard is the standard.
Oh, see, there's a match made.
You can if you think that that's a guy that you could end up getting. If that's who you have your sights set on, and then you can take it then.
So that's unbelievable.
And he's probably going to be okay with Ryan Poles being the GM of the team.
So basically what we're talking about is the Bears. So far today, we have discussed the Bears possibly taking the former Packers coach and Cowboys coach in McCarthy. And there's a history of taking Ditka back from the Cowboys and the Packers-Bears thing goes back to, Jerry Vannese and everything and things like that. The Bears taking the Notre Dame coach in Marcus Freeman.
Right.
And now the Bears taking the Steelers coach in Mike Tomlin.
The parallels between what McCarthy and Tomlin and Sean Payton have been are there. The guys that won a title. Been a while since they won a title. And you look, they're good. You know they're good. But will they ever be great? These are questions, right?
They are questions. But I thought that overall, what the weekend reminded you of and should remind you of is the need for the next offensive mind of the Bears, be it an offensive head coach or an offensive coordinator, to understand that you must run the ball. And as we'll talk about at 5 o'clock, I think it's even more important because your quarterback is good and I think could be great, but he can't run it like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Jaden Daniels.
He's not really built to run it like those guys.
No, he is not. He is not.
But I do think he could run it like vintage Russ, and I think that ends up being good because I think he's a better thrower of the football than Russ. But I digress. Why don't we find out what's going on with one of Spiegs' favorite candidates for Bears head coach and what is probably going to be a bizarre scene tonight for this final wild card game that's going to be played in Arizona. Pete Bursich is going to join us to discuss all of those things next on The Score.
We're going in like we're the road team in a playoff game. You can always adjust the other way if that's the case. But I know their fans are very passionate about their team. And like we've said all along, we were getting on a plane to go play a road playoff game, and our fans travel well. We know that. We've seen that all season long, and we've got to go into it knowing that the environment and the circumstances, especially coming off of last Sunday where we got to feel it at a pretty significant level and work through it, hopefully we can extract that experience and apply it to being a road playoff team.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Kevin O'Connell talking about his team as they get ready for tonight's game. By the way, tonight's wild card weekend finale, when the Vikings take on the Rams from Arizona, we will have it for you here.
Damn right.
Coverage on the Score, courtesy of our friends over at Westwood One, starts at 6:30 on the Score and the Odyssey app.
That's us. You'll get it right here. Kevin O'Connell going against his old team, his old boss in Sean McVay. But it's in Arizona, game not in Los Angeles. The fires have been crazy, man. I've been watching the coverage all weekend long and thinking about just, you know, that whole town of, like, it's always been built with this precarious relationship to nature to begin with. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'd see a house when I was out there on any of those canyons, those beautiful canyons. That's like on stilts, essentially. The house is on stilts. And you're like, how is that even possible that that house is there? How do you trust that? Or like, you know.
Well, we got some of that here. Like, if you go look around in Bridgeport, there's a lot of houses that are built like that. And you go, oh, that's an interesting design.
Mm-hmm.
And what will it take? Like what can it withstand? And in California, like, you're seeing, man, it's just.
It was like audacious to build it out there where the water's not even there. You got to get the water from someplace else, and it's like a desert right on the water and right on the ocean, and the winds come in and the fires come in, and there's drought, and it's like, but we had the audacity, or the Odyssey, I always mix it up, to like build a whole city out there and turn it into what it's turned into. But on top of fault lines, like, everybody knew that sometime nature was going to fight back, and it's fighting.
There's a risk, and, you know, like, that for all of those beautiful sunsets that you see, or people, like, I mean, you know, you lived out there.
Yeah, man. And you fetishize it and aspire to, like, live in the canyons and live in these precarious, like, oh man, I'm right there in the middle of it. But woof, scary stuff. A lot of people out there very freaked out because your whole relationship to nature is getting challenged, you know?
Yeah.
And like, on the lowest end of importance of that stuff is sporting events getting canceled and moved and having to be dealt with. And that's our milieu, and we'll stay in that. But just find myself thinking about the bigger stuff all weekend long.
I was happy that the NFL didn't waste a lot of time with this. Like, I give them credit over at 345. They were like, hey, this is a problem, and we need to start already thinking about solutions. Like, okay, what's the closest place that we know we could get something done? And, like, okay, we're going to send it to Arizona. And then, like, 2 days later, they were like, no, we're moving.
Bing, bang, boom.
We are moving this whole operation so that everyone can get on board with it. And if you're the team, if you're the Rams, the likelihood that you've been affected by this is high. The likelihood that if it hasn't been you personally, it's someone you know is really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about that as being a part of it too, on, like, how do you get yourself prepared to do what you need to do to protect yourself and to try and win with that being something that's weighing on your mind. I haven't heard any stories about, you know, Rams players' houses being in the middle of this, but I imagine that there are some.
There's a great story on The Athletic from Jordan Rodriguez about the Rams' reality changing the way it did over the weekend. And I was looking at it where, like, this one of the guys on the Ram, Rob Havenstein, who I think was a coach, was working on stuff, and they're all kind of like, they had their practice and there's some blue sky. And then he, like, looks up and he's like, wait a minute, I see there's dark smoke over there. And he's like, oh, wait, I think I live over there. And like a whole bunch of the equipment staff and coaches and others, like, ran from the field to the parking lot to grab their phones and were, like, checking it out to figure it out. And, like, the whole Rams reality changed in about 4 hours from earlier in the day, McVay saying, I think we're going to be okay. Yeah, we're going to stay here. We're going to play in the game. And then 4 hours later, they're frantically making plans to get the hell out of there. And everybody is like had to adjust and try to figure this out.
Well, there was also going into the weekend, there was the worry of what if you end up in a weird situation 2 weeks from now where the Chargers and the Rams are hosting NFC and AFC title games. And how do you navigate that as a league with two teams in different conferences mm-hmm. that share the building? Yeah. How do you make all of that stuff work?
30 players and coaches had to evacuate their homes.
I'm not surprised.
On Sunday or Saturday afternoon.
And that logistical... I'm always fascinated when teams move. Like you'll see it later on this week with the Cubs caravan when they pack everything up and you see the trucks like going down to Sloan. That's something that you plan for months as a baseball team. A football team, you're asking an entire operation to move in a week.
Yeah.
To get down there and then get prepared while you have guys wondering about their own homes.
It's crazy.
Their friends' homes. Like all of that stuff.
How do you not think advantage Vikings in a situation like that?
You're basically playing a bowl game. Now, granted, Los Angeles to Phoenix, there are a lot of transplants going both ways. So it will be a partisan LA crowd because there are already a lot of Rams fans who live in Arizona.
But just the mental focus and what you're talking about for all these players and everybody involved to like focus on their jobs. The Vikings were going on the road anyway, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I do think it makes their lives easier.
To be in Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure, they don't have to deal with the volatile home crowd or whatever, But either way, it's like they're playing a road game. Now it's in a different spot, and they won't have the home thing. And the Rams are the ones that are having to adjust and not feel the benefit of having their own locker room and everything.
Let's ask Pete Bursich about this. He's our friend, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Pete, thanks so much for joining us. What's this been like for the Vikings? Has it just been business as usual because they were playing on the road no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, I think a couple things in how this game goes will definitely be a good tell. Part of it is getting your rear end kicked by Detroit might have helped because it might have woken some of these guys up. You had an extra day of film. You had to figure these things out. And, you were able to learn a lesson and have it not cost you this season. Now, for us, it's an away game. It doesn't matter where this plane goes. It doesn't matter where the plane lands. You know, you're playing on the road. Now, the atmosphere is going to be different. I don't think we'll have to deal with the crowd noise. I mean, I don't think we were expecting a ton of it at SoFi to begin with. But we've experienced something similar to this back in the day when the dome collapsed in Minnesota because of snow and we had to play the Giants in Detroit. And there were just yards of homeless people that wanted to get out of the cold to come in and watch the game. I don't think today's environment will be like that, but it's definitely going to be different for everybody and everybody on the field. And as a player, the playoff environment is something that's unbelievable. And I don't know if that's going to be the way this game is going to look. It's definitely not going to feel that way. But your thoughts and prayers go to everybody out in California. But you wonder how deeply affected are these players with family and friends and everything else, and then having to get on the road, leave people behind. I mean, it's got to be a bit of a distraction for them.
Yeah, for sure. Pete Bursich of the Vikings Radio Network joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. So did Sam Darnold being as bad as he was against the Lions really possibly change the decision on whether to keep him after the great year that he's had? Does one game really change it that much?
No, I don't think so. And I think, well, obviously what he does today could change that whole thing in a hurry. I do think he was off in the beginning. I do, let's just put it this way. We're 0-6 on our last away primetime game. So there's a problem there that's got to get fixed. The first couple throws to Hockenson early in that game were on him. But then later on, we started having protection issues. And, we're running pick routes because we know we're getting man-to-man. We're not executing. So it's not just one guy. All right, it never just is one guy. But for the Vikings, they've got to make a decision as to what is McCarthy? Is McCarthy the day one starter next year? Is that just how it's going to be? And if it is, then you can find a way to maybe keep Darnold around. But Darnold has to agree to it. He's got to be on board with the decision. Because even if you franchise him and somehow no one takes him away and you have him next year, you don't want him to be a distraction, right? I mean, it's good news for the Vikings in that they have an asset that they would love to keep. And if he does go away, maybe they can get some draft equity from it. We only have 3 picks in the draft this year, so that's a possibility, you know, to build that up in that regard. From everything we know of and talk about, it's going to be J.J. McCarthy's team next year. So, you know, it's hard to bring in a good veteran with that cloud over it.
P, I'm so fascinated by the job that Kevin O'Connell has done up there and the way that he's been able to handle a bunch of different quarterbacks and get them to play better. So I'm sure there's a lot of belief that he can do all sorts of stuff with JJ, but I'm just curious, how have you seen him turn into a coach of the year candidate?
Well, you hear people talk and they say certain things. It's, you know, like buzzwords, like it's a collaborative effort. Right. And you hear these things and then behind the scenes in reality, it's one guy making decisions. That's not really the case here. It is a collaborative effort. And Kevin O'Connell, we're a quarterback heavy offense, but he does know the fundamentals. He played the position. He was drafted at the position, coached the position, was an offense coordinator. Now he's a head coach. And I hope, I don't think Bears ownership listens to the show all the time, but if they are listening, you guys in Chicago need to take heed of that and say, we need somebody that can bring in and develop our greatest asset that we have, and that is our quarterback. He is the future, right? So you have to build on that. And for the Vikings, that's why I was excited last year when there were 7 guys that were number one first-round draft picks, that we have somebody like Kevin O'Connell in the room that can tell you, knows the position, right? You don't have a defensive minded head coach making a decision on a quarterback. You've got a guy that knows exactly what he wants, how a guy fits in his offense. And that's the benefit of Brian Flores for this team. Brian Flores has saved this team millions of dollars by bringing in people, for example, like Jonathan Greenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, Blake Cashman, who fit the system. And so you don't have to go out and just sign a bunch of all pros and have guys go out there and make plays. They fit the system that we have here. And that's been it's been a great marriage between Flores and Kevin O'Connell. So hopefully for Vikings, for us, that we can keep this, marriage together, if you will.
Well, let's see about that, shall we? Would you trust Brian Flores as a personality, as a person, as a leader, to handle another young quarterback, to your knowledge?
Yes, 100%. 100%. Let me just say this. Sometimes a guy needs a hug, and sometimes a guy needs a kick in the ass, right? I mean, how would it happen if Dicka was still coaching there? Right, you wouldn't be getting a lot of hugs. It wouldn't be all, touchy feely and the whole thing. I would 100% trust Brian Flores and how he deals with, because they're a different cat these days. These are different players. It's just a different environment. And Flores, to his credit, doesn't care about the name on the back of the jersey. If he needs a guy, he's going to put him in. You've seen it throughout his career as a coach, bringing in people off the street that you've never heard of. Right, Kamu Grugier-Hill has 2 interceptions for us this year. Who's Kamu Grugier-Hill? You ever heard of him? I never heard of him until this year. But the guy comes out and he plays well. He just has a way of getting the best out of whoever is there. And I think as a head coach across the board, that would be fantastic. My first question, though, would be, who's going to be your offensive coordinator? Because you need to have a guy who's proven, and do you want to take a risk on promoting somebody to offensive coordinator to handle that, the offense of the Chicago Bears. So, you could do a hell of a lot worse than Brian Flores. He would fit in the city of Chicago perfectly, Boston College guy. He doesn't say a whole lot. He's a tough dude. And you can see it, I think, with the way our defense is played. He just has that attitude.
Well, Pete, we appreciate you jumping on. We know you're getting ready for this game. Thanks so much. It's going to be a bizarre experience for all of us. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. For you guys, anytime, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Burse. That's Pete Bursich, who believes in Brian Flores getting another shot. Lawrence has his questions. I understand.
I just think that there's been a lot of people have, like, inside this conversation, people have painted Tua as being soft. And I would just say that all you have to do is look at his history, and it would prove that he is not that. So if he feels that way, there must have been some egregious bleep going on.
Well, and then the personality switch to Mike McDaniel is about as drastic as it could possibly
100%.
Be. So it's an interesting dynamic.
And
for
maybe
sure.
You need something in the middle of that.
Yeah. Well, maybe once Mike McDaniel gets fired, you can bring him in as your offensive coordinator. And
he likes to run the ball, or at least he used to run the ball.
He used to. A guy who was almost the Bears coach was getting some love last night. And I want to ask you if it affected you the way that it affected me. We'll talk about that. And then there's quarterback swap stuff at the top of the hour. Is it swap or regerts?
No regerts. We'll get into it on the score.
Spiegel at home.
Good vibes, baby.
Afternoons on the score.
Because you're defending touchdown, right? You're defending touchdown there, and them throwing a ball for 13 yards or 10 yards, whatever that is, doesn't really matter.
The plays also leading up to it were a really big deal, because when you're in that spot, you don't have timeouts, and we use one early, obviously, to get out of bounds, to give yourself a chance at the next play.
You know what that is, right? It's Eberflus saying the play before the Hail Mary didn't matter. Wasn't just didn't matter.
Even though Dan Quinn was like, oh, it was like the most important play. It was like the most important play.
Side by side.
Yeah.
Two coaches.
Because you're defending touchdown, right? You're defending touchdown there, and them throwing a ball for 13 yards or 10 yards, whatever that is, doesn't really matter.
The plays also leading up to it were a really big deal.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. And those two guys were both candidates, both finalists, for the Bears head coaching job. And Ryan Poles chose Matt Eberflus instead of Dan Quinn.
And the Bears chose Matt Eberflus instead of Dan Quinn.
They did. They did. And it's a bad, bad choice. In retrospect, Dan Quinn and the Dallas defense were awesome for another couple of years. And now the Washington Commanders basically have had the season that the Bears dreamed of having with the rookie quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, oh,
a lot of jealousy.
Oh, man.
It's palpable.
And Terry McLaurin, who is just a badass.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
A lot of DJ Moore in him.
Oh, I'd rather have Terry McLaurin.
Sure.
I think. But, man, I love that guy. After the game, on the field, it was Melissa Stark he's talking to after the Sunday night game. He brought up, they were talking about, like, specific situational moments and how good Washington's been. They've won their last five games on the final play from scrimmage.
Is that good? Or
either on defense or offense, they've sealed those games by being effective. And they're great on fourth down. They're really good in the fourth quarter.
Their fourth down math was terrific. And the points that they end up scoring touchdowns instead of field goals, and the field goals would have left them 2 points short than what they ended up doing on their fourth downs.
And they got it done late again, and Terry McLaurin pointed to the head coach.
Terry, you told me, because you have been through it all, you've been through the turnaround here, that this team knows how to win in the gotta-have-it moments.
Yeah.
How?
Since DQ got here, that's what he spoke about. We have meetings each and every week talking about the gotta have it moments. And at some point, we're going to look at each other in the eye and say it's our time. And when we look at each other and say that, it really means something. And the great thing about it, we've been resilient all year, and we've been able to be in these moments, different opportunities, and we've come out on the other side victorious. And it's because of the guys we have in the locker room. It's because of the work we put in. It's because of the gotta have it moments. And so that's what the playoffs is about.
He's really good at situational stuff.
Spees, can I make you feel worse about Dan Quinn not being the Bears head coach?
Thank you, please, yes.
Because you've been leaning into your inner meatball a little more. This is our friend Laura Oakman with her pregame report last night about Dan Quinn and the way that he reacted to what he felt was some disrespect from the Tampa coaching staff.
Hello, Laura. Hi, Jason. Dan Quinn showed his team a video last night, like he does every Saturday night, to fire him up. He wanted to keep it consistent because so many Commanders haven't played in the postseason. Shoot, even Terry McLaurin only has played in one playoff game before tonight. But then he shared a story as a little turbo boost back from 127 days ago when they faced off on this field. Please know I'm having to clean this up big time. There's a lot of great words I cannot use. But Quinn told his team, quote, after they kicked our asses, a Bucs coach he's friends with came up and said, hang in there, man. You're going to be all right. And Dan was like, what? Who do you think we are? I'm not your little bro. So he told the guys, that's what they think of us. We ain't little bro. So let them know little bro ain't the same. I asked Jeremy Chin, are you the same? He said, absolutely not. It's almost hard to watch the tape because I'm like, who are these people? Quinn added, we were slower, less connected, not like us. I asked Bucs Brian Robinson, do they look the same to you? He said, they do not, but neither do we. Jason?
And that was a clean version. Thank you, Laura.
Hi, Jason Benetti.
Hello, Laura. Thank you, Laura. Hi, Jason. Yeah, so that doesn't feel good on any level.
There's a lot not to like about that.
What are we doing, man? What are we doing here? I mean, we're both doing it. I wish we had that. I wish we had that. I wish we had this. We don't have that.
Yeah.
It's right there. It's on our television all weekend long.
Or Westwood One.
Oh, yeah. On our radio. Excuse me.
I was driving around and I was like, but they were like, oh, yeah, let's go out to the broadcast team. Here's Jason Benetti. I was like, that feels great. Uh-huh. And then he's like, here's Laura Oakman. I'm like, hey.
She's good.
Friend of the program.
Here's a good head coach and Dan Quinn.
Yeah. Not allowing them to pull the CJ Stroud
at least
stuff.
At least he
was trying to do with Caleb. You're going to be all right. How about this? Shut up.
Like Marcus Freeman probably said privately about James Franklin.
I bet he did. But I will say this. Franklin's not lying. That hairline is crispy. Marcus Freeman got that good hair.
How old are you? I'm 38.
I'm a grown-ass man with seven children. Yeah, shut your mouth.
Seven children. I'm a head coach of a hallowed university.
Know your role and shut your mouth, jabroni.
Shut up. Why don't you beat a top five team?
Yeah, you never do that, sucker. All right, when we come back, we will ask you the question, did you get the tattoo that says no regrets as it pertains to your quarterback while you're watching Sunday Night Football? We'll discuss that next here on The Score.